If people are dieting now more than ever before, then why are nearly 1 in 3 American adults overweight? Dr. Gundry, who's helped thousands lose weight and feel younger and healthier than ever, says most people are not getting enough fat-burning MCTs from their food. MCTs are a special kind of compound that, instead of turning into fat when you consume it, turns into ketones, which is a chemical that breaks down the excess fat in your body. So, by getting more MCTs in your diet, you essentially flip a switch that puts your body in caloric bypass mode, which can flush out excess fat and calories. And he's created an easy way for you to activate caloric bypass right at home. It's called MCT Wellness. This powerful blend of fat-flushing MCT powders and antioxidant-rich polyphenols is designed to help you unlock your body's fat-burning, energy-producing potential. What's even better is that it's a delicious drink. I love how incredible it tastes. All you do is add a scoop to water, enjoy, and watch as you start feeling slimmer and more energized. So, if you want to experience a quick, easy, and effective way to melt pounds fast, go to GundryMD.com/energy and order right now to get up to 53% off your regular price order with a 90-day money-back guarantee. Again, that's GundryMD.com/energy.
At Kroger Pharmacy, CARE is making it easy to get vaccinated. CARE is helping you stay protected from flu, COVID, and RSV. Seasonal vaccines are available 7 days a week with evening hours. CARE is giving you a shot at staying healthy this season. Walk in whenever is best and get multiple vaccines in one visit at your local Kroger Pharmacy. So come and get the protection you need while protecting those around you. Kroger Health, a world of care, is in store. Visit Kroger.com/vaccines for more. Restrictions and exclusions apply. See site for details.
What time is it?
You're locked into the flagship, an Ole Miss podcast powered by College Corner.
Here we go.
1, 2,
get your daily Rebel sports fix at the Ole Miss Spirit, omspirit.com.
Welcome into the flagship on this, the Talk of Champions podcast network. As you see, I'm Ben Garrett, at Spirit Ben on Twitter. I write for the Ole Miss Spirit, omspirit.com, and affiliate of On3. You can sign up today for just $1. He's Chase Parham. And Chase, I'm going to give you a nice little banner look here. Chase covers Ole Miss sports for rebelgrove.com.
There you go.
And I want to make sure I got this right. You can follow him on X, because I've always thought it was the one thing. It's at Chase Parham now. Just
I changed about a year and a half ago because I thought I'm really stupid for not just having that username and sticking with it. It was really dumb. So
yeah. Well, it was a different time. First of all, it was called Twitter and not X. Second of all,
I still say Twitter because I think you're supposed to be as accurate with people what they understand. So I ignore it. I don't say X. I'm like boycotting.
Which I appreciate because I don't say X either. It doesn't make any sense. It is Twitter. Like, why not get into this conversation? Because we're here to talk about Ole Miss baseball and Hunter Elliott, the biggest news of a very, very, very active offseason, both positively and negatively in many ways. For Ole Miss baseball, has seemingly, for all intents and purposes, for a personnel standpoint, as far as significant, there could be more additions. I'm not saying there won't be, but as far as the biggest domino for where they are and what they were trying to get done, that fell on Thursday because Hunter Elliott announces, see at Swayze meeting, of course, that he's going to be returning for a final Ole Miss season. Before we get into all the ramifications of things, first and foremost, Hunter Elliott, the singular decision, I want to give him just his moment. I don't want to talk about big picture stuff because that's what I think we get swept up in that too much these days. Hunter Elliott, last he pitched, was one of the very best pitchers, not only at Ole Miss and in the SEC, but in the country. He was headed towards superstardom, all these things. So the fact that he, after Tommy John, after such a long injury journey, can now be at a place where he can resume that career regardless of the stage. Because I know at this point in his career, he was expecting to be in a minor league system somewhere and competing, but it still should be celebrated. The fact that he was able to overcome that and get to a place where he could potentially pitch again, that by itself alone is a big deal, even though, you know, Tommy John's something pitchers recover from now. I just wanted to say, before we get into like, wow, Ole Miss could be you know, could maybe get back to the tournament next year as a 2 or 3 seed. Let's just take a moment and say, hey, good for Hunter Elliott, man, because that kid, what a shitty circumstance for him for a while.
Yeah, a guy that at the end of 2022, as you mentioned, I mean, he starts the game against Oklahoma that clinches it. I think in the postseason that year, he beats Southern Miss, Miami, Arkansas, and Oklahoma. Ole Miss wins his last 7 starts of the season. He allowed 4 earned runs and 25.1 innings over the course of that postseason, just completely dominant. I mean, you look back at that title-winning team, and Dylan DeLucia or Hunter Elliott started 8 of the 10 games that Ole Miss won during that postseason. They scored 22 runs in one of the other games that they won in that postseason. And then Jack Doherty goes 5 perfect against Oklahoma in game 1. That was the pitching performances in the postseason for the Rebels that year. And then he comes into 2023, throws against Delaware on opening day, goes 5-6 innings or whatever, ends up with a UCL strain, sits out 8 weeks, comes back against LSU and was a shadow of himself. The velocity was in the mid-80s. He shouldn't have been out there, probably should have already had surgery. It was painful to watch when you're talking about a kid that you followed in that rise that he had during his freshman year. So I'm right there with you. I'm glad that he's going to have the opportunity to continue his legacy, to build on it. Because, look, it's already set. I mean, he's a kid who started the game that won the national championship. Like, you don't take that away from somebody. He's a Team USA guy. But it says a lot about – and I think this is the story. Is it says a lot about Hunter having some confidence to come back and be good and pitch in the SEC. Because, look, if you have Tommy John, and look, it's been a long recovery. He's 14 months right now. He was shut down for a little while during the recovery at one point. Like, he's had a couple hiccups, which are normal. That's not something to stress out about. I expect him to be 100% for the fall. But a kid who, look, the Dodgers would have paid him $150,000. They'd have been more than happy to hand him a $150,000 check and say, come pitch in our minor league system, see how it goes, and we'll go from there. And that was a viable option that you could have taken if you didn't really trust your stuff and trust your ability to get back and pitch and compete and be good at an SEC level. Because if you don't throw well this year, or you re-injure, or you do something, I mean, God forbid, knock on wood, that doesn't happen. But if that were to happen, you have even kind of less stock. Because right now, it's simply a Tommy John. As you said, everybody comes back for those things. They're essentially a prerequisite for pitchers at that level at this point in the world we're in. And you've got Team USA experience. You've got SEC experience. You've got winning pedigree and background. Like, there's so many things that you have to kind of get an opportunity. And now you're going to go back to Ole Miss and give it a shot. And I'm fascinated. You know, there's been 3 or 4 or 5 things in this offseason that I don't know how good this team's going to be. Maybe we're going to get into that as we go. But there are 3 or 4 things that really interest me. And I think top of the list is, how close is Hunter Elliott to being a frontline starter? How close is he to the changeup and the off speed being good, the ability to spot that fastball? Because there's a difference in healthy and sharp. Hunter Elliott is healthy. He's back 100%. He can throw all those different things. What does the sharpness look like? Does it take a little while to get back? Is he completely ready for the spring, the fall? Is it something that, you know, materializes over the season? Does he have new stuff? Like, you know, how is Joel Mangrum, the new pitching coach, going to work with him? He's kind of evolving now from injured pitcher and trying to get back to that opening day. It's a pretty fascinating story, and a guy who, he's already a legend, but he gets a chance to actually sort of build on that and maybe be the guy that brings them back into some level of contention as far as making that tournament, as you said.
Yeah, and, I was watching something about Ole Miss basketball. I think it was the Field of 68 podcast, which I think is really good. And they were talking about how Ole Miss has got a top 20 roster in basketball, could be top 5 in the SEC. But really, what it's something we've done forever in this business, but giving out grades for the offseason. And it was always going to be incomplete until you got the Hunter Elliott news. Xavier Rivas, what, going into the draft, what I was told, and I'm sure you've told similar things because we know who each other talked to, that essentially, you know, they were looking to try to keep at least 3 or 4 of Riley Maddox and Mason Nichols and Connor Spencer and Hunter. And not only do they keep 3 or 4, they keep all 4. And but there was some hope that Xavier Rivas maybe would make a decision to say, he signs after going in the 16th, the New York Yankees. But now that you've seen it all, you know what happened with other high-profile guys, high-profile visitors. They missed on some. They landed some. They addressed some needs. Maybe they didn't address certain things exactly like you'd like to see them address them. But the grade that now that it's essentially complete. The draft is over. Hunter Elliott has made his decision. Xavier Rivas is signed. Yes, they could still have additions or subtractions, I suppose, but
it's pretty much over. I think they're done.
Yeah, I think they're done too. But you never these days. I never close the door completely. Is all. So I'm curious, you know, because I want to give them a passing grade. I want to give them a solid B+, considering where they were. But I wonder if that's enough, right? I wonder if that's what they needed to get done. And that won't be a story that can be told until they play games. But I do think they're more competitive. Still, I think they did a pretty good job of addressing things, specifically with their plan for the pitching staff and rebuilding the roster, or at least the rotation, through veteran returning players with that earmarked money for NIL with Andrew Fisher gone, Liam Dole. But they've had back-to-back really bad years. They had a long way to come. Have they made up enough ground? What's the grade for you?
Okay, there's a lot of there's two parts to this. Let's break it down into two different things. There is their overall grade, and then do they have enough? Those are two separate things. So let's talk about their grade. Let's talk about what they did portal wise each way. They lost a lot, and here's why it's even an incomplete beyond us answering this question is that there is a big asterisk out here next to JT Quinn and Grayson Sonia. Are they going to go to new programs? Are they going to thrive? Or are they going to be really good in the SEC arms that catapult Texas and Georgia, respectively, in those rotations or in those bullpens or whatever they do? Now, look, it's not apples to apples. Sometimes guys do really well at a new place and they simply weren't going to do well at the old place, no matter what the coaching changes happen or whatever, and you need new scenery and all those different things. Had Peyton Chautanier had a hell of a year at TCU, it wasn't going to be an indictment on Ole Miss letting him go. That is true.
Even though that's how it would have been treated.
100%. But this feels like a development test case a little bit here. And it's one that Ole Miss has acknowledged because they hired Joel Mangrum. They changed their philosophies. They put the pitching in somebody's hands. So it does bring on, hey, we had a deficiency. We had to fix that. We are trying to fix that. But in the shrapnel of it, we lost these guys. Are they going to be any good? I think Grayson Sonia is a question mark. I think there's some things about him that I just don't know to that level if that's going to translate. I think JT Quinn's going to be really good. I think Wes Johnson's going to work with him at Georgia. I think he's going to be a bullpen arm that's really competitive and borderline elite. Maybe I'm wrong. You can flag this. People can throw it back in my face next spring, but it's what I believe.
Gotcha. I never understood that.
We all know that Liam Doyle and Wes Mendez have talent. Like, Liam Dole has a very high ceiling. Now, is he being consistent? No. I mean, he gets roughed up at times, but his good is really damn good. And then Mendez is probably going to be an elite left-handed arm. I mean, he just is. I mean, Ole Miss saw that. They used him in that way. He was being developed well at Ole Miss. He just got caught up in all the subterfuge of Fisher and Doyle and all that stuff, and he ended up gone. So they lose these elements, and they lose these elements from a team that went 11-19 in the SEC. But Ben, you know, and look, I don't know where you fall on Pythagorean winning percentages and things. I don't know if you're for them or against them, but it's a stat, okay? And for anybody out there, it means when you throw all the stats in together, how many should you have won or should you not have won? It kind of brings luck in and tells you whether you overachieved or underachieved based on luck.
It's a very baseball stat.
It is. And 30 games is a very small sample size to use it because the SEC schedule is only 30 games. However, when you run Pythagorean on Ole Miss, they overachieved statistically last year. They actually should have won 8-point-something SEC games instead of 11. So that's where you are coming from a Pythagorean standpoint, is actually 8-point-something to 21-point-something as far as losses. They lose all those arms, and then when you look at the returners, as you said, they keep Elliott, which is a complete addition because he wasn't on the roster last year for all purposes. So that is a potentially frontline arm that you get back that comes into your rotation that did not exist. And then you keep Spencer, Maddox, Nichols. I've heard a lot of good things about Maddox. I'm buying stock on Maddox for next season. I think he's the type of profile that Mangrum's really going to do well with. I think he's a guy that can go from just a sinker ball guy to really having some up in the zone fastball ability. Like there's some stuff I really like there. I think there's going to be some velocity ticks up. I think Nichols is probably the same guy next year for the most part, but that's not the worst thing. That's an arm that can help you in some capacity. And then Connor Spencer was pretty good on the back end most of the time. Ole Miss just didn't have a lot of save opportunities. I mean, I don't mean that as snarky. It's just true. You didn't see a ton of him because they weren't competitive at the end of games in ways to use him effectively. And then they go out. They get Alex Caney from Tampa. He's a kid that, look, keep this in context. He profiles similar to the way that DeLucia profiled. He has a slider that really is pretty sharp. He's got multiple pitches. He can throw up and down in the zone, which, again, is something Mangum's really focused on, is the ability to get up and down in the zone. What you don't know is that DeLucia did what he did because he was just a freaking dog, and he was so damn competitive and so good, and he wanted the ball, and you can't teach that. You don't know that until they get under the lights. Frankly, Mike and them didn't know it with DeLucia in the freaking dugout because they weren't even starting him to begin the year. So there's all those elements. The St. Joseph's kid, Will McCausland, there's some stuff I like. He's been really good at the Cape this summer. He's done a good job up there. He had a weird stat line at St. Joseph's. He allowed a crap ton of hits and then struck out a ton of batters. And it was a weird thing when you looked at all the combination, but there's some stuff there. So there is an upside to the pitching that I like. But if I'm going to do the complete upside, I got to go to the complete downside too and go, hey, transitions are hard and all these different things. I don't know what to make of that. So to answer your question, you needed to keep everybody that you could possibly keep. They needed to develop and improve for next season, and then you needed to add because you couldn't just stay the same. You had to get better. So it wasn't a matter of just keeping the same guys. On an overall offseason, because of losing all those potential guys, and with Fisher gone too, we didn't mention him, I'm having a hard time giving them more than about a C-. However, I think in the last 2 weeks, 3 weeks, keeping Maddox, keeping Nichols, keeping Elliott, keeping Spencer, for actually even adding Caney, I'm going to throw him in there. I know it's a D2 kid, but I like him. There's something about him that I kind of like. I'm going to give them a B+ from that moment. Again, keep that in context. But from that moment, because had you not gotten a B+ right there, you are done. You are sunk. If Maddox signs and the Royals take him early, or Nichols does this, or these things that could have happened, instead, you keep these guys, and what you did that's pretty important based off what we're talking about is that they proved it with their actions. They believe in either Ole Miss or the program, because Maddox could have left. Nichols could have left. Spencer was drafted. He could have left. Elliott could have signed with the Dodgers. Stephen Head and company would have handed him $150,000 and been more than happy to do it. So because of those things, you do have some veterans now in your program that believe in it, that want to be there, and have shown that with the skin in the game. And that's really important because Ole Miss didn't really have that last year. These portal guys came in, and there was no identity. Nobody had been there from the year before. It was a bad season in 23. Stuff was all over the place. Because when you look at the SEC, and it's why this is so hard, and it's hard for me and you and for Joe Fan to figure out, is I don't know how good the team has to be competitive, because the league is so much better than it's ever been. We talked about that last time I was on the show, that because they're rating mid-majors for talent, because of NIL, you're able to get draft picks back on campus. The talent that is necessary to be competitive in the SEC is at an all-time level. So what looked like a really good team 5-10 years ago no longer is a really good team. Like that has taken another step on what is necessary. And I don't think even us, we've figured out where exactly that line stands, because you win in the SEC in a couple different ways. There's a couple different categories right now that show that you can win in the SEC. You have great players and a ton of NIL, and you just stockpile it with talent and you make it work. That's Texas A&M. You saw they just gave Ryan Prager the rumored $750,000 to come back to Texas A&M for a final season and turn down a third-round draft pick that was slotted at like $800,000-something. Instead, he comes back to College Station. What Tennessee has done to win the national title, same kind of thing. And look, can those elements fall apart? Sure. But it takes like clubhouse fall apart. It takes a complete mishmash of personalities and for something in the build-in of the roster to fall apart, because baseball is such an individual game that players not liking each other on the field doesn't even really matter. It's got to be something that sort of tears it apart from the clubhouse with those kind of guys. So you need that. You need either that, or you need older team that understands completely an identity and plays that identity. Georgia, Kentucky, they did it really well. Mississippi State did that to a certain extent. And I think that's probably the category that Ole Miss needs to get in. That's how you do it. And what that's going to do is that's going to require, frankly, what is the category of the style of play? We don't really know. We don't know what this looks like because there's so much turnover in the lineup and in the potential rotations and these guys being different. I don't know what that looks like, but that's where this charge to me is really important. If Ole Miss is going to be competitive, when we say competitive, we mean 13 to 15 SEC wins where you're in the NCAA tournament, whatever that looks like. I think if you're going above that, you're beyond my scope of what I believe right now. But if they're going to do that, it's a really critical time for Riley Maddox and Nichols and Luke Hill, who suddenly become a leader on this team. It's kind of it's fascinating. You know, in February, he was the guy that had the hack job and what that was or wasn't, and the shortstop who dyed his hair back to the original color because he didn't think it was working. I mean, that's blasphemy in some circles for as far as Ole Miss baseball. And instead, he's become like this poster child of holding this thing together. So I don't know. You know, there is the margin is still very slim. There is kind of one path, but at least there's a path. I don't know that there was going to be a path about 3 weeks ago. And I know I'm just rambling and you can shut me up, but that's sort of the interesting part of this for me is that I thought going into the draft, hey, these next 48 hours might be the death knell that might just put them in and be done. And when I look up, I go, okay, is it perfect? No. I'm a little worried about where the talent would stick inside the SEC top to bottom, but you want a little bit of hope, and I can find a way to best case this thing to a little bit of hope that doesn't make me look like I need a straitjacket.
This is Cali. With C Spire's blazing fast nationwide 5G network, she's got her fans in the palm of her hands. Live streaming her Mississippi Blues from her phone wherever she is. Out there, wherever they are. Right now, get the latest 5G phone on us. Only at C Spire, customer inspired.
Protecting homes and businesses from the whims of nature, you need more than just quality materials. You require Riverland Roofing. Licensed, insured, and certified, Riverland Roofing offers not only the assurance of excellence, but a tailored approach to your unique structural needs and budget. To learn more about what Riverland Roofing can do for you and the community, call them at 662-644-4297 or visit riverlandroofing.com.
You know when you discover a new binge-worthy show or that song you can't help but leave on repeat? You just have to share it with your friends, right? Because who doesn't want to spread awesomeness? Now you know how I feel telling you now about Mint Mobile. Mint Mobile offers premium wireless for $15 a month when you purchase a three-month plan today. It's such a good deal, I couldn't keep it to myself. My past plans have gone as high as $100. Friends don't let friends overpay for wireless. Time to say so long to those overpriced wireless plans and switch to Mint Mobile. All plans come with high-speed data and unlimited talk and text delivered on the nation's largest 5G network. And don't worry, Mint Mobile will get all your old stuff off your old phone, including those existing contacts. So don't wait another second. Get your new three-month premium wireless plan for just $15 a month at mintmobile.com/TOC. That's mintmobile.com/TOC. $45 upfront payment required. New customers on first three-month plan only. Speed slower above 40 gigabytes on unlimited plan. Additional taxes, fees, and restrictions apply. See Mint Mobile for details.
If people are dieting now more than ever before, then why are nearly 1 in 3 American adults overweight? Dr. Gundry, who's helped thousands lose weight and feel younger and healthier than ever, says most people are not getting enough fat-burning MCTs from their food. MCTs are a special kind of compound that instead of turning into fat when you consume it, turns into ketones, which is a chemical that breaks down the excess fat in your body. So, by getting more MCTs in your diet, you essentially flip a switch that puts your body in caloric bypass mode, which can flush out excess fat and calories. And he's created an easy way for you to activate caloric bypass right at home. It's called MCT Wellness. This powerful blend of fat-flushing MCT powders and antioxidant-rich polyphenols is designed to help you unlock your body's fat-burning, energy-producing potential. What's even better is that it's a delicious drink. I love how incredible it tastes. All you do is add a scoop to water, enjoy, and watch as you start feeling slimmer and more energized. So, If you want to experience a quick, easy, and effective way to melt pounds fast, go to countrymd.com/energy. And order right now to get up to 53% off your regular price order with a 90-day money-back guarantee. Again, that's countrymd.com/energy. Why are so many dogs suffering from health issues? Actress Katherine Heigl, who's helped save over 16,000 dogs through her foundation, says she's seeing more issues with dogs' joints, odors, and health than ever before. And after doing a ton of research, she feels there's one place we can look to support any dog's health: their food. So she decided to create something she could actually feel good about feeding her dogs. It's called Superfood Complete. Superfood Complete is made with over 30 of the healthiest ingredients on the planet, including several superfoods vital to your dog's health. Badlands Ranch also sponsors the Jason Debus Heigl Foundation, which has helped rescue thousands of dogs and place them in loving homes. Dogs across America are trying this food and experiencing amazing health benefits. Go to badlandsranch.com/save50 and order right now to get up to 50% off your regular price order with a 90-day money-back guarantee. If you want your dog to experience all these incredible things, go to badlandsranch.com/save50 today.
I feel the same way. When you lose your best hitter and you lose your best pitcher, regardless of your opinion.
Let's not sugarcoat it. There was a lot of talent that left this program.
Yeah. And when that happens already on a bad team, I feel like that immediately, I mean, there's no better that you can do than maybe a B. I mean, maybe.
And Ethan Leger's gone.
Even Ethan Leger's gone. I mean, there's so much you could point to. Like, I thought one of the biggest, one of the biggest failures of the offseason was when they brought in three visitors, including Jackson Ross's brother, and struck out on all of them. And that was the first big red flag for me. I was like, uh-oh, this isn't good. So I had the same mentality as Chase going into the draft. I was like, I know what their plan is. And if the plan doesn't go exactly as they plan, they could be in real trouble really quickly, because trying to piece it together without these pieces is damn near impossible.
No,
it's done. So from that vantage point, I was like, I'm grading the plan of the draft plan that saved their ass. You know what I mean? Because that's the way I feel, truly how I feel. And I don't mean it personally. I'm just like, They've dealt with a lot, man. This has been a heavy thing. Now, a lot of it of their own making. Their coaches, they're big boys. They can take this. They know they got to win more than they won the last 2 years. They ain't dumb. You know what I mean? And they ain't babies neither. Well, one of them might be a little, but still, you know what I mean? Point being is like, when Andrew Fisher and Liam walk out the door immediately, I'm like, I don't know what you're great. You're going to make it best. Like, man, you got to see way to recover. And they did recover.
And then Mendez. That was the one that actually feels like it stings the most, because that was a dude that's upside with two years left, and you're going, oh, my God.
Yeah, because Sonia was what he could be. He was built in a factory. JT Quinn, he was built in a factory. But also, we could have some conversations about scouting and all that stuff from COVID, those kind of players that look like they're built in a lab, but because we didn't get our eyeballs on them again. I agree. Mendez was a big loss. But so for me, can they hit on their plan? And they did, and they're getting Owen Pano back, because I think it could start at shortstop for them. Luke Hill and his face turn has been incredible to watch. He's actually been a good soldier. I was one of those that was championing, hey, you know, this is going bad already. You should have kicked his ass off, because, you know, you got to set a culture, because you're right, there wasn't a culture. But one thing that happened is Luke snapped into line and played his ass off and became a really good player in this league.
He actually was really good the second half of the season. They were so bad as a team that it got overshadowed that he hit like 330 or something.
Yeah, he was so good. So, like, you could see, he could lead off or bat second for them next year and be really good. Will Furniss has some upside in the bat, but it really came down to the draft. And one thing I was told that, because, again, I didn't believe they could get it done. I didn't believe they could get 3 or 4. They got 4 or 4, so they did one better than I thought they could do. I never thought Xavier Roof was coming back. Then I saw Chase report something about Xavier, and I was like, but the draft wasn't just the big four. It was Owen Pano. I mean, we knew Slade Caldwell was going to be gone, but they got some guys that when you're trying to say, all right, where does the upside come from with the West Mendez? I know what you lost. Give me some hopium. And that's where, you know, they did. That's where I give my grade of a solid B. After the draft, because it was a C minus. I was with you. I was C minus. I mean, I didn't. There was a lot.
And look, let's be honest. That's probably us both being a letter too high, because going into the draft.
Absolutely.
Look, there are reasons that things happen. But at the end of the day, from a school board standpoint, you picked up kids in the portal to that point that played at BYU, that played at Tampa, or not, I guess, before the draft, maybe not. I remember when Kenny did it, that played at UNO, like all these different places, Illinois State, the shortstop, Luke Chang. And then you lost kids to Florida State, Georgia, Texas, Tennessee. Like, there is something looking at it where you're going, hey, I don't know. Like, yeah, the kid with it we got rid of, he went to Missouri State. No offense to Gabe Smith. But then the other kids that left, they went to pretty big places, and you're grabbing from some other places as well. So, yeah, it got better as the portal class went on. But I don't know. I just kind of looked at it for a minute. And it reminded me of, like, Major League Baseball.
Okay. No, okay. Let me say before you do your Major League Baseball, you just because I think a problem we have these days, we can't admit, you know what? You're right. You're absolutely right, because I think that by default, we want to give a better letter grade just because, well, you and I are human. I like who I like and you like who you like. You know what I mean? Like, there's all kind of stuff we want them to do well. You don't want to see people fail. But I think we too often give B's because it's easy. We say, well, B's good enough. It's our, like, LOL response in text messages, because LOL doesn't make anybody mad or sad. You know, they can just take it how they take it. A B, not going to offend anyone. Quite honestly, B's are good grades, and they don't get a good grade. They don't necessarily get a good grade, but they get we see the work, and they got that done. They've given themselves, like you said, a real chance to salvage this. In a way, I'm not saying completely, but
Again, we're setting a bar that is not crazy high. When we talk about it being salvaged, we're talking about trying to get into the tournament. We're not talking about 20 SEC wins. That's not in the stratosphere of where we are right now.
Which is crazy, because you and I were sitting in a rent house in Omaha that we thought was haunted, but was delighted and awesome. And who was the state player who stayed there the year before?
Tanner Allen.
The state player. Tanner Allen's, his family had stayed in there the year before. We're reminiscing about all these things. You know, Ole Miss baseball was a play. All right. All you got to do, Mike, is just do what you've always done. Just make the tournament. I mean, there was never a doubt they were making the tournament. And
they won the national championship 25 months to the day from right now to the day.
It's kind of like perfect that we got on together, because we were in Omaha. We spent all of that time together, and you and I had this. That's why when I talk about baseball, I got to talk to Chick, because he and I, we feel very similarly about a lot of this. Like, you and I said, I think you were the one that kind of like crystallized that for me. It's like, well, Mike's going to be here forever now, because
I didn't anticipate this. Yeah.
Yeah. Mike, this is what Mike does. He wins and he goes to the postseason. He just doesn't win in the postseason. And now it's been flipped. We finally, our Ole Miss fans finally get what they want. And then
I had two errors with that I admit. I was wrong on two different things. I was wrong on the development problem that Ole Miss was flirting with that we didn't realize at that point, because 2022 had hit it in such a way, because their top 10 offensive players were all guys they had signed out of high school. It looked like they had really developed into that season. And then moving forward, there was no development. They were just really bad. And then B, I didn't anticipate the level of care the entire SEC was about to go into from an NIL standpoint. I thought that Ole Miss, Mississippi State, Arkansas, LSU, Texas A&M, I thought those were going to be the six superpowers that sort of went, hey, we're going to spend a ton of money on NIL, and we care about baseball, and we're going to do this. And instead, you're looking up, and Ole Miss's NIL is mid-level of the league at best, something like that. Like, these other teams have gotten so carried away with baseball NIL that it's just sort of staggering, and I did not have that pegged in my head at all. And I think the elevation of the league, and then Ole Miss being such an old-school program and not using technology the way that they probably needed to in a lot of ways. They needed to hire somebody to run the pitching. Mike had to become a manager instead of a coach in a lot of ways. All those things just really got covered up by those you know, those weeks in Omaha and that team that was so veteran and so built from the inside out that we're just not going to see that again. Like that, that's not going to happen in this era anymore. And it's the irony. It's, I really like this class. This freshman class is really good. I like them a lot. I know they lost Slade Caldwell, but there's multiple dudes in this class that I think are really good SEC players. Maybe even immediately over the course of the next 3 years. I think that Owen Pano can be a star, whether it's in the dirt or in the outfield next season. They can kind of move him around to wherever they need him. We'll see what that looks like. Cade Townsend's an arm that could throw immediately for them. The Federico kid, whose dad's the head coach at ULM, I think he's really a really good infielder, a solid kid that could play second base if he had to, something like that. It's a class that I saw on the message board. Somebody goes, hey, it's more talented than 2017. Well, hold your horses now. That's stout. That was Gray and Thomas and Cooper and Rollison and those cats. That was the number one class in the country. Mm-mm. It's not them. But it is a pretty deep class that I really like. It's a class they did a great job getting to campus because you only lost Caldwell out of that group. And it's a class that could set you up with young players who stick in your program and sort of reset your program in a way that makes sense for what you need in the NIL era. The big hanging red flag over this is, does Mike have time for that to matter? Does Mike have time to let these freshmen play and take some lumps and try to go 13-17 and eke into the tournament? And does that save his job or not save his job? Or what does that look like? And that's the element that's going to be very hard to cover this season, because in a perfect world, you've got a portal class and a group of freshmen that really mix well together and you sort of see the light at the end of the tunnel, but you're not in the tunnel yet to get to it. And what does that do from where the program sits right now and where the overall decisions are made on how to manage the program moving forward?
That's really well put, and that's where we'll leave it, because I think every Ole Miss fan should be excited that Hunter Elliott's returning, man. I mean, this is the shot in the arm that they desperately needed. Now, we don't
know. There is a chance that Elliott or Maddox could turn into a legitimate top half of the league Friday guy. The chance.
And that on your on its own can get you into the postseason, because most programs don't have that. They're searching for it. Well, go ahead.
Yeah, it's why Arkansas was as good as they were. I mean, now look, neither one of those guys are going to be Hagen Smith. Do not misinterpret what I'm saying. But if you're really good in a couple spots and you play really good defense, you can get by okay. You can be that personality too at times. And maybe that's the way that they're trying to do is, hey, we're going to try to really pitch it on the front end, not walk anybody. Sure. I'm a little worried about their pitching depth. Like the middle looks a little shaky. I don't know how many arms I'm fully trusting right now. But it's July 26th. It's not time for that yet. But I do kind of have that question. And we didn't touch on this. I do think between the outfielders they brought in, Humphrey, Sanford, some of those guys, whoever ends up being the catcher, I think that's a weird competition as we move into the spring. I'm not ruling Smithwick out there yet.
I'm putting him in left field if you really want my honest opinion.
I'm going to say he catches. Actually,
they want him to. I know they want him to catch. I don't know.
My hot take is that he's going to catch and Luke Hill is going to play center field.
I like that because they have enough second basemen. And I think Luke has real positional versatility. He could open himself up as an MLB draft prospect in the outfield more than in the middle infield. You know, when he got.
Yeah, I think it's that. And then it's a Chang Pano deal at short. And we'll see what that looks like.
I like Pano a lot, but I'm done. Is wanting any expect if you expect freshmen to step in and be your savior, it's not.
Ole Miss people are faulted on that because they've seen it so many times. Yeah. Because in their past, they had Errol do it, they had Gray do it, they had Cozart do it, they had Servideo ready to do it if he needed to do it. But that's a different class than is fair to put on somebody when you're coming into this thing immediately. My point, all that is, they should be better defensively and a lot better because they were horrid. I mean, they were one of the worst defenses in SEC history last year. Mm-hmm. Just simply being average is probably worth 2 or 3 extra wins just because you were so bad at kicking the ball around, stressing pitchers with extra outs, extra pitches, all the stuff that go along with that. So I do think they can profile a 9 on the field that gives them a pretty legitimate defense. And that's a good start when you're trying to rebuild this thing at all.
And that's where I was going, because I remember one of the first things when I was talking to Clem to start the off season, one of the first things he says, like, we got to play better defense. And I mean, everybody knew this, but like, if you're really, it can be quite simple as they were so bad defensively, catch the damn ball and you're going to win more games. And 2 or 3 more games wins last year, they're in that tournament. And who's to say they don't get it? You know, they don't get it.
I could be wrong, and I'm not looking it up. I think they had double digit errors on their pitchers last year.
That's just insanity. That never, I mean, 11 pass balls by Campbell Smithwick is bad enough. I mean, but like double digit errors from your pitchers. So catching the ball, as simple as it sounds, matters. But I do want to touch on something before I let you go. Because I was Hunter returning. I remember as they were making this draft plan, going into the draft, saying we got to some of those guys, it's a really good point. I not thought about it until it just kind of popped in my brain when you said it. But, like, they didn't have an identity last year. These weren't guys that, like, it's not like Gray was the – there was a Gray Kessinger who's a legacy playing shortstop. It always means something to him. A Thomas Dillard coming up. Campbell's a freshman, right? Like, so you're just like, oh, yeah, the Oxford kid. There was no connection.
Their only returning position players were Ethan Leje, who'd been there 1 year, and Reagan Burford.
Yeah.
That was it.
There wasn't any of that connected tissue. So one thing I heard going into the draft was Hunter and them are pissed off with the way Andrew and Liam left. Because no one begrudges them of leaving. No one. I want to make that crystal clear. Like, those days are over. Andrew, bro, you want to go spend your last year in college?
They both transferred to you. So the thought that they would transfer out is beyond.
Do your thing. But the way Andrew specifically, you know, reaching out to his teammates, trying to get people to go with him and doing it the last hour, that seems intentionally malicious. So for a lot of his now former teammates, including Hunter specifically, who was name dropped, they were pissed off. And they're like, you know what? I'm going to go on the draft. And if it doesn't work out the way, yeah, I'll come back. You know, a lot of that is kids and hubris. You know, it's like, yeah, screw them guys. Well, I'll show you how we do it at Ole Miss. But they went 4-for-4. So that energy, that energy that they have, could be something as far as the unquantifiable that could help them, because last year they were just an island of misfit toys thrown together to try to not lose.
It 100% will help them. It also, though, you've got to throw Furness and Hill in there because it has to be started by position players.
I agree.
Pitchers just aren't on the mound enough. So it helps in the clubhouse. It helps around. Because, I mean, Hunter almost, again, this is not, I'm going to be careful here because I don't mean this is a shot at him at all. He was just doing his recovery. And by all accounts, he was a really good teammate and did all he could last year. But he's almost like this stop sign over here where the players look and go, well, God, we don't even have him. Had we just had him? And it's like this negative feeling that comes on when you look at him and Revis, and that's two-thirds of your rotation that's sitting over here with their arms in braces. Mm. And I think it created somewhat of a weird environment in that point. Whereas, yeah, now – you do have some guys that can facilitate this and can push these guys in. And I mean, it just looks different. You look, Kentucky showed you that. Kentucky had a great culture and they rode that to a super regional and to an Omaha and to a national seed and all that kind of stuff. So an SEC title, actually, I think.
Those things are coming for Ole Miss next year.
Yeah. Now, is it a guarantee? No, but you at least see, I mean, the chemistry, God, I'm not about to go down the other path. But you can see where it's at least better. I mean, you need that type of setup because look at 2022. It was because of the returners. Don't get me wrong. It was because of DeLucia and Elliott and those newcomers. But when DeLucia and Gaddis and those guys showed up, Bench, Elko, Graham, Chatagnier, like all those cats were sitting there in the field ready to go and ready to go right then. I banged on my desk and then my dog thinks somebody's at the front door.
Even better.
You're not going to get that level, but you do need a couple cornerstones in that playing infield and then in that everyday lineup that can get you going. And I do think that's – look, it's a responsibility and it's a pressure, but it's also probably the only way it could potentially work. And it's that you get these pitchers with Maddox and Elliott and these guys to set you, and then you get Hill and Furness to sort of carry it in the infield and go from there.
I need Will Furness to become campus legend. I need him to do the Sykes Orbis. You know what I mean? Like, it's just swing Ole Miss to
his dad is one of only four names on the facade at Alex Box. There are only four, and Eddie's one of them.
I would love to one day when I'm about to die to look back and say, yeah, I remember when old Will Furness stepped in here for the first time and he saved Ole Miss. Hey, man, that would be great. If you want to do that, there is a vacuum that needs to be filled for that. It's been the flagship. I'm Ben Garrett at Spirit. Been on Twitter. He's Chase Parham. Writes and covers for Ole Miss Sports for RebelGrove.com. It's affiliate of Rivals. I write for the Ole Miss Spirit. OleMissSpirit.com. It's affiliate of Ole 3. He's been my friend for a long time. Thank you for doing it, my friend. We'll do it again.
Appreciate it, bud.
At Kroger Pharmacy, care is making it easy to get vaccinated. CARE is helping you stay protected from flu, COVID, and RSV. Seasonal vaccines are available 7 days a week with evening hours. CARE is giving you a shot at staying healthy this season. Walk in whenever is best and get multiple vaccines in one visit at your local Kroger Pharmacy.
So come and get the protection you need while protecting those around you. Kroger Health, a world of care, is in store. Visit Kroger.com/vaccines for more. Restrictions and exclusions apply. See site for details. When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger. For thousands of appetizing ingredients that inspire countless mouthwatering meals. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week, and up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with points. So you can get big flavors and big savings. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.